What's going on, y'all? Jason here, interrupting all of the wonderful draft coverage at Climbing the Pocket with a special edition, special podcast from the one and only Saxy Prince, getting you ready for another event coming up this week. Yeah, we got Endgame. So Saxy Prince decided to go into the booth and give y'all an all 22 film breakdown to get you ready. Hope you enjoy.
Hello and welcome to a very unique podcast. You know, we've been getting a lot of draft content lately, so I kind of want to do something a little fun and nerdy. I know besides the draft, we have another thing coming out this week, Avengers Endgame. I'm super stoked about this movie, and I kind of just wanted to give a recap of the last 11 years. Let's get to it. Okay, well, it's been 11 years in the making. Have to start with the day one. Robert Downey Jr. gets casted as Iron Man. The first Iron Man movie opens in 2008. I think it really sets the tone as far as the Marvel Cinematic Universe. You kind of really knew where the humor was going to be at. You know, the action sequences were great. It really just reinvented what we knew as far as the origin story and giving the characters a little bit more of a driving point kind of reach this destination, this coming of age story. I loved the first Iron Man. I thought it was fantastic. Jon Favreau directed it. Robert Downey Jr. did a fantastic job in that role. To give a little bit of backstory, they stayed a little bit closer to the comics as far as Tony, you know, being trapped and kidnapped and whatnot and having to really escape and really that becoming his inspiration to becoming Iron Man. And it's a little bit different because, I mean, I'll talk about this a little bit later, but Marvel did something that they did with some of their characters, some of their heavy hitters, and they really told Robert Downey Jr. to give his interpretation of who he felt Tony Stark to be. Tony Stark in the comics is not what we think of an Iron Man. He's not really a very likable guy, and I think Robert Downey Jr. has made this character very likable, very, you know, sarcastic, and I don't know, it really worked for the character. So really hitting it right in Iron Man 1, really setting the tone for, you know, the future of the franchise, as well as starting this cinematic universe, the first to really culminate a bunch of different superheroes that one action affects, you know, potentially affects another movie. And I thought this movie was great. There's plenty of action scenes. You got the introduction of the Ironmonger, which is a supervillain of Tony Stark in the comics, and you know, really seeing him enter into his own as Iron Man, and then obviously the movie ending with him revealing that who he is. So that's going to play a bigger role into in the comics. It played a bigger role to another story that I'm going to talk about a little bit later. This movie I think was a really good starting point for the Marvel franchise. And with that, you know, I forgot to mention, obviously, all these movies that I'm going to first start talking about is what was known as Phase 1. So that includes about four movies, and then a phase typically ends with an Avengers movie. That's how Marvel really wanted to do it. And it wasn't really noted until after the first Avengers movie, but they broke it down into three phases. That's why you're having the story arc be, you know, over the course of these phases. Moving right along, we move right into The Incredible Hulk. I did not think this was a great movie. I don't necessarily think it's integral for you to watch it if you are a casual watcher, but I didn't think it was a great movie, but I understood why Marvel did it. They had a previous movie on the first Hulk that really wasn't a success, but I did think Edward Norton did a lot with the little he was given with the script and where it was going. Hulk suffers from, I would say, the issue that some of these other more superpowered heroes suffer from. When you have a guy who's essentially unstoppable, you know, the Supermans, Incredible Hulks, certain aspects of Thor, it's really, really hard to capture these characters in a way because they can't lose, they don't lose very often, and they don't really lose. So it becomes a thing where you have to create an obstacle for them that is a compelling enough story that really captures the audience. And I don't think this did a really good job with that. There were some definitely some key moments, but I just overall don't think it's a great movie. I'd probably recommend just skipping it altogether, because I think you don't even have to be introduced into Edward Norton. You can be introduced into Mark Ruffalo's iteration of Incredible Hulk, and I think he does a really good job balancing both Bruce Banner and Hulk. So, like I said, you could probably just skip this one. Really not too much to the story, even though it does fit into the overall, you know, story arc. Iron Man 2 comes in. You know, it's our third film, and obviously in the phase one, I thought this was they were building off the success of the first Iron Man. Robert Downey Jr. obviously reprises his role, as he will throughout this last 11 years. And they introduced something that I think was really interesting, where you really get to see Tony Stark struggle with, you know, the thought he might be dying. Obviously, he's this billionaire, playboy, philanthropist, like he always says. But this is a story that he has to have this eternal struggle with. He loves Pepper Potts. He wants to make sure she's okay. And he's really wrestling with, you know, he's going to die, and he doesn't know how to fix it. But he still wants to save the world. He still wants to be the superhero. So like throughout this story, you get introduced into Mickey Rourke plays Ivan Vanko and or Whiplash. I thought Whiplash, it's a great character that they introduced. I just don't like the utilization of him. I just think he was underutilized. It was great to have a lot of different players, but I don't think that they synthesized his story arc to the best of their abilities. But overall, I think it's still a great movie. I don't really think that this per se is super necessary to watch, but I will say again, if you're just a casual fan, I would still recommend watching this movie, though it doesn't play too big of a role in, you know, where we're leading towards the end of phase one. So we move on to Thor, the very first Thor movie. Chris Hemsworth plays Thor. Asgardian prince, gonna soon to be king. Super arrogant. I think Chris Hemsworth really captured what Thor is. Thor is very arrogant in the comics, and he doesn't really care about very many things besides his own victories and triumphs. And I do think that they stuck really close to the comics in this movie. You know, his half brother Loki has always been a thorn in his side, and I do think that they did a really good job putting him as the antagonist in this movie. And again, you get to see, it's another coming of age story where you really get to see Thor having to shed this level of arrogance and learn to be, I guess, more human, which is why he's sent to Earth, and that allows us to connect with his character a lot better. And I do think that the story had a really good pacing, had a really good humor. That's something that Marvel, it really found their, you know, formula from the first two Iron Man movies, and then they kind of brought that into these Thor movies. Thor isn't as serious as he sometimes is in the comics, which I think was like a little bit of brevity to the story. Made it move along a little bit better. And I just think that they did a good job with synthesizing some secondary characters, as I'll refer to them. I didn't actually mention it in the last when I was talking about Iron Man 2, but Iron Man 2 introduced Black Widow as well too. Now, I think this is what Marvel did a really good job with, especially in the first phase, is they allowed us to introduce secondary characters like a Black Widow. And then in Thor, you saw Hawkeye be introduced. And Hawkeye is actually one of my favorite characters. I think he's a lot more fun to have in these stories, in the comics. But, you know, I understand that he's played more of a background role in these movies. But Marvel did a really good job because you can introduce other characters without having to give them an entire movie. And I think that's what works with, as we'll talk about later, works with Hulk, as you see him as being either kind of a co-protagonist or just like kind of a background character as well too. So overall, you definitely need to watch Thor, in my opinion, in order to have aspects of the Avengers movie make sense. I think you also really enjoy this movie. Okay, Captain America, the First Avenger. I have some thoughts, y'all. I do have some thoughts. Now, I think it was 2009 when I learned that Chris Evans was going to play Captain America, I was not happy about the casting. I've been perfectly candid and honest about it at that time. I mean, I was obviously wrong, but I wasn't happy just because I had seen Chris Evans play in, you know, the things that I've seen in Scott Pilgrim. I've seen him in, obviously, in Human, he was the Human Torch in Fantastic Four. I've seen him in, Not Another Teen Movie. So he played the sarcastic, funny guy really, really well. And I was worried that he was going to try to step into Cap and make Captain America that character. Just because in the comics, Cap is not, you know, he has a very, very strict moral compass. He is, I don't want to say serious, but you never really get that lighthearted humor from him when you're reading the comics. You strictly read him because he's just such a leader. He's such a Boy Scout. When Chris Evans came into this role, I think he did a fantastic job capturing the real tone of what Captain America should be. I think Chris Evans did something that I kind of knocked Robert Downey Jr. in Tony Stark, where I didn't feel like it was Captain America playing Chris Evans. It was Chris Evans playing Captain America or Steve Rogers. And I think that's really important to have that distinction, especially as an actor, as well as just these movies, because I really want to see someone different than the real-life person that's playing them. And I will say this, I didn't find this movie great. I didn't think it was a really compelling story. You know, in the comics, they did stick true to how, you know, Steve essentially sacrifices himself. It's actually like a missile launch instead of a little plane in the movie that he kind of sets down. And I just didn't think it was a great storyline. And maybe it was just like I just really couldn't connect with the time period that was there. They did one character I was really, really happy with was the woman, Peggy Carter. And she ended up getting her own spin-off show for about 2 seasons and stuff. And they're still hoping to bring that back. But I think the character did... I think the actress did such a wonderful job playing Peggy Carter. And I think that was one of the best parts of this movie. Overall, it was an origin story just like the other two were. The origin stories wasn't great. But I think it's something that you probably should watch if you're a casual fan, just so that you can kind of make that connection, because it really bleeds into the Avengers movie. Now we get to the end of phase one and we cap it off with an Avengers movie. Now you have to understand, I highly anticipated this movie for such a long time. I knew this is where the stories were heading to with all the, you know, Comic-Con appearances and whatnot. So I was really excited for this movie. And when I heard that Joss Whedon, who, you know, has directed things from like Firefly and Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I knew it was going to be good. And it did not disappoint whatsoever. To see this many heroes on one screen was, you know, at one point thought to be near impossible, but it was synthesized so well. Just a little backstory as far as the movie goes. If you haven't seen it and you're just trying to catch up, obviously Captain America, Iron Man, Thor, and also Black Widow, Hulk, and Hawkeye are supposed to, you know, kind of band together and stop Loki, Thor's half-brother, essentially, from trying to take over the Earth. And, you know, this is where we get introduced into, or we get reintroduced into a key item from Captain America, the First Avenger, and the Tesseract, which we later find out is actually one of the Infinity Stones, and I'll get into that a little bit later. And I thought this movie was great. The pacing was fantastic. I thought that the message was really clear as far as where they wanted to go, not in just in this movie, but as far as all the movies after this. And just having it be having such a clear idea of, you know, okay, this character is going to, you know, really fit into this role, and these other characters are going to kind of fit into these other roles, and I don't know, it's just well done. I saw the movie 3 times in theaters, so I highly recommend that. If you haven't watched it, definitely important for you to watch before we get to Endgame. Just kind of sets the stage for it's the Avengers origin story. You know, we essentially got 4 origin stories prior to the First Avengers, and then this is the Avengers origin story. So I think it's definitely integral to the plot line. And then we get towards the end of the movie where, a mid-credit scene with Thanos essentially being introduced. And, you know, when I saw that, I immediately knew where Marvel was going to go. I knew that they were going to take me on this journey of the Infinity Gauntlet storyline. And it was just exciting to see how they have... just that little teaser gave us so much of where what their direction was. So definitely see it if you have not seen it. I think it's fantastic. You'll really like the story. Okay, now we get into phase 2. So this is a little bit different because we're going to get a slightly change of tone in these movies. It starts right off the way with Iron Man 3. And this is a little bit different because since the events of the Avengers, Robert Downey Jr., or excuse me, Tony Stark, he's suffering from PTSD. He is still reliving having to see so many aliens, enter into a world that he thought was just based off of, you know, mathematical equations and science. And now it kind of shook his world. So you really see this journey that he has to go on to really rediscover who he is, because he's been Iron Man for several years. And I think it was probably the weakest of the Iron Man films. I know they went a different direction as far as directors. Jon Favreau did direct this one. I know he did the first two, but he didn't direct this one. And I thought the movie was just okay. You know, again, I don't actually feel like this movie was that integral. I actually thought the second Iron Man was actually more important. And there's some theories around that. When in the second Iron Man, Tony creates that new element, some are saying that it's the same energy and frequency that the Tesseract actually has. Get into that a little bit later. But if you wanted to skip a movie in Phase 2, this would probably be the movie to do so. I don't think it adds very much as far as the overall Infinity War storyline, but I think it's still good. If you love Iron Man, Robert Downey Jr., this is great to watch. Now we move into Thor 2. Obviously after the events of Avengers, everyone kind of goes their own way. Thor kind of returns back to his home world and I guess the rest of the other realms, in which they're all in strife right now. They're all having issues, and Thor essentially has to take it upon himself to go and solve that. And again, I thought this was a weaker film, and I also don't think it's really that integral to the storyline. The only thing that you really glean out of this is the Aether, which, as you find out, becomes one of the 6 Infinity Stones. So there's not much that you really get from this film. I didn't think it was a really strong film. I thought Chris Hemsworth is doing a really good job capturing Thor, but he's shifted a little bit now. You know, this is a Thor who has become more humble, has still confident, but there's not that level of arrogance that you saw in the first film. So his character becomes a little bit more bland. And I think the supporting characters become more important to, you know, lifting him up. So overall, I just didn't think the storyline was that enticing. I know they tried to introduce the Dark Elves as well as Malekith. And I still think that they did a fantastic job with costume design as well as makeup art. But just not the greatest film. Again, another film I think you can skip. And, I hate to say that this is now two films that I'm recommending skipping. But, if you're a casual fan and you want to get through the important movies, I wouldn't say that this is one of them. However, I will say that you would probably miss a little bit of one of the Infinity Stones, in which they do talk about quite a bit in this story. Okay, shifting gears. I told you that I did not like the first Captain America, the first Avenger. That completely changed. And it got this movie, Captain America, The Winter Soldier, got me from the trailers. The thing that captured me the most was I just saw the scene where Cap's kind of running through all these hallways, jumps from building to building, chasing the Winter Soldier, throws, his shield. The Winter Soldier just catches it, throws it right back at him. I thought that was fantastic choreography. And I think that's what really stands out about this movie is the previous movie, I felt like it felt limited in the effects that they could do. It felt limited in the choreography that they could do based on the times. But this movie felt right off the bat that it was going to be a different paced movie, and it was. I saw Chris Evans, excuse me, I keep making that mistake, step into even further into who Cap was. And you really get to see, how his moral compass really drives who he is. And in this movie, there are so many memes that came out of it, but this movie is a little bit, I think this movie is actually really integral to the storylines that happen after it, just because you witness the fall of S.H.I.E.L.D., Hydra really rises from its ranks, and it spurs a lot of different characters out of that. You obviously get the Winter Soldier. Black Widow comes back into the movie, which is really great. I think, again, she's done a really good job with, though she's been a secondary character, doing a really good job with, bolstering a portion of the story that, didn't necessarily need her, but that the fact that she was there made it that much more exciting. Again, I think the choreography in this movie was fantastic, really well done. Every scene seemed to ramp it up as far as the how the battle sequences were kind of laid out, the fight sequences and stuff. So, I think this movie had one of the most iconic scenes that I've seen in a movie. I know that might sound a little bit hyperbolic, but it's the scene where when you watch the movie, there's a scene where Chris Evans, Captain America, is in an elevator, and all these guys get into the elevator with him, and he starts to notice that obviously something's wrong, and he just says point blank, "Yo, before we get started, does anyone want to get out?" And then this epic fight just ensues in an elevator. And again, it's just the little things that Marvel did in Phase 2 to step it up a notch, because they knew that they had to. They couldn't give you the same story from Phase 1. So again, I highly recommend this movie. I think you should go out and check it out if you haven't seen it. I think it'll make you fall in love with Captain America a lot more. And then it's also a storyline that keeps playing on throughout the next phase that we're going to get into in a little bit. Okay, I know that not very many people are going to like me when I say this, but the next film I'm going to talk about is Guardians of the Galaxy, and I wasn't a huge fan of it. And it goes back to one point that I had made before. I'll mention this first. So the Guardians of the Galaxy storyline is obviously a bunch of different personality types that happen to find themselves together. They kind of join together, become a team, and they kind of become like a mini Avengers team, but for space. Chris Pratt it gets casted as Star-Lord. And I think the casting was okay, but here's my problem. It goes back to here's a side of the coin that I think didn't work, whereas Robert Downey Jr. did work. So when I had mentioned before about Robert Downey Jr., like Iron Man essentially, or Tony Stark essentially being Robert Downey Jr., I think this is a side of coin that I didn't like. I don't feel as if Chris Pratt is playing Star-Lord. I think Star-Lord is playing Chris Pratt. And if you look at a lot of the movies that Chris Pratt has been in lately, you can see that that sarcastic, you know, one-liner type humor is there. And I don't really think that that's Star-Lord. You know, I think Star-Lord's a little bit more of a... I don't necessarily want to say he's a Captain America type guy. He does have, like, a moral compass, but he's very clearly the leader of the Guardians of the Galaxy. And I don't get that sense with Chris Pratt. I think he always seems to be the butt of the joke. And it doesn't make me like or respect his character as much. And knowing that he's the leader, he's the captain. And I have to ask myself, well, why? You know, because in my opinion, Gamora is way more of a leader than anything else. And then I would say, like, Rocket Raccoon is the next leader. I don't think that this story is super important for you to watch. I think you could probably get everything you need to get out of these characters probably in the next movie. But I would say, you know, it's an origin story. You know, they needed to introduce these characters in a sense at some point before they're in a major movie like the, you know, another Avengers movie. So I don't recommend going to watch this one. It's really just a story of a bunch of misfits who become a team. And, you know, we've kind of seen that storyline done a few times. But, you know, there's some good jokes in there. You get to see Chris Pratt really take a transformation from where he was at Parks and Rec and then becoming, like, this kind of, like, really shredded, ripped dude for Marvel. So, you know, Zoe Saldana does a really good job as Gamora. And, you know, but Dave Bautista does a great job as Drax. I think he does a really good job capturing that character because Drax is very literal when it comes to all that stuff. And then, you know, as far as Rocket Raccoon and Groot, you know, they're obviously done really well. I guess mostly just my hangup is Chris Pratt's Star-Lord. I don't like him in that role just because I don't think he's... I don't think that he is having to stretch himself to play the role. And mind you, I'll say this. I don't consider myself a comic book snob where I'm the type of guy who's like, oh, well, that's not what happens in the comics. So therefore, you know, I hate it because it's not in the movie. My take has always been, you know, just like all the other comics, a lot of these comics, they have so much iterations. They have different writers who are writing, you know, some of the same storylines, but they're maybe bending a little bit from the source material, from the origins. That's what I expect for the Marvel movies. I expect them to give me essentially another comic book iteration of this and have that be one iteration that I absorb. And I just don't feel like I liked Chris Pratt that much in this. So, like I said, you could choose to go see it if you're a casual fan, but that's not one I recommend. Now, Avengers Age of Ultron. I remember being super excited for this film, and I know that I've said that a few times about a few movies, but I knew that the Avengers needed to face a really, really big villain for this movie to work. For the second film, I thought it was going to be Thanos, obviously, because they introduced Thanos in the last Avengers post-credit scene, but they didn't, and it made sense. It was like, okay, well, fighting Thanos is too soon just because he's such a big bad, and I knew the Avengers were going to lose to him. So introducing Ultron was definitely a right choice. You know, Joss Whedon takes up the helm again to write and direct this film. And I got to be honest, I don't think the film was that great. I remember being super excited for it and then just like it not meeting my expectations. And as far as the storyline, obviously, so you're now bringing together a lot of these guys from the previous team. They're now operating more as a team. You know, Hulk gets a little bit of a unique turn where he's really stepping into his hero role. You know, the rest of the team is just operating together as they've been operating for a while. So obviously you introduce Baron Zemo. I kind of really like the way they did Baron Zemo. From the comics, he's kind of like this. He's in this like really pink suit. He is kind of a big bad amongst in the comics and whatnot. But they kind of limited his role, good and bad, I would say, because I didn't want them to spend so much of their time on Baron Zemo. But they were able to introduce, Wanda Maximoff and Quicksilver, which was great. And at the time, Marvel was kind of struggling with their licensing as far as they couldn't really call, them mutants. But we all knew that they were mutants. But they called them Miracles. So it was interesting spin on how they chose to do things. But again, this movie wasn't great. I in the comics, Ultron is essentially created by Hank Pym, who is an original founding member of the Avengers. Hank Pym hasn't been introduced into the storyline at this point. He does in the next film I'm going to review, which is Ant-Man. And he helps he really is the one that creates Ultron with the help of Tony Stark. But in this, he hadn't been introduced yet, so it obviously made sense to more create Ultron through Tony Stark's, ego, as well as, with the help of Bruce Banner. So they create him. My issue with Ultron was I think Davis Bader was a fantastic choice. I think he truly captured the essence of Ultron's voice and just his how maniacal he can be. My issue was it is that his creation and how he started off, it felt a little bit inorganic because he went from where am I, where's my body, to I need to exterminate the Avengers. Like there was no buildup. There was like, okay, why did he go from that wanting to know where his body was to wanting to murder as he said, make extinct the Avengers. It didn't make any sense to me. But I think, again, you were able to introduce so many secondary characters. You were able to introduce Scarlet Witch, Wanda Maximoff. You were able to introduce Quicksilver. And then you also were able to introduce Vision. And I thought Vision is really integral to some of the future storylines just because of what he is. He's a different kind of character, a different kind of superhero. And I think when you're dealing with, Norse gods or the Hulks or, Iron Man, you do need to start branching out in how you are introducing these characters. And it was a good film that I think I think the best thing it did was able to introduce characters that we were going to see in the next couple of films. But overall, not really that great of a storyline. I do think you have to watch it just so that you understand, because Thor does finally introduce the Infinity Stones to us as the viewers. And then it kind of really cements what we as maybe more of the nerdy fans knew, that, okay, yeah, they're definitely moving towards the Infinity Gauntlet storyline. And Thor kind of reveals that. I do think one thing the film does really, really well is to show the dichotomy between Tony Stark and Steve Rogers, and how Tony Stark is very much a futurist. He wants to fix the problem 20 years down the road right now. And obviously that creates friction between he and Captain America, because Captain America pretty plainly states every time someone tries to end a war before it starts, innocent people die. And it's just, again, you get to see the dichotomy between these two viewpoints in which you kind of sympathize with both sides of that. So that internal struggle that's within the Avengers is actually a really, really nice piece. The movie definitely ends with Hulk, you know, going off into space. I knew as soon as I saw that they were going to introduce the Planet Hulk storyline. I didn't think it was going to be, I didn't think it would be great to just have that storyline. So when I get into that portion of things, I'll mention that. But it was great because this movie at least gave us a few little nuggets to kind of hold on to for future films. Last movie of the Phase 2, I won't talk too much about it. It's Ant-Man. I was a little skeptical when it was announced that Ant-Man was going to be getting his own movie. I knew that they weren't going to be introducing Hank Pym. They wanted to go the Scott Lang route. I get why they did it. I would have really loved to have Hank Pym, but you know, obviously hindsight, I think it's great that they went that route, just because you could introduce a character like Paul Rudd, who I think is doing a great job, Scott Lang. This is actually one of those things where I guess I'm going to kind of reverse course again, and I'm going to say, you know, I don't know if he's Scott Lang, or Paul Rudd's definitely playing Scott Lang. It might feel like more Scott Lang's playing Paul Rudd, but it works because I think this film kind of makes fun of itself in a sense, and you know not to take it too seriously, which I think really works for it. You do still get introduced to Hank Pym, as well as you get to introduce to Hope Van Dyne, which is the daughter of Janet Van Dyne, who's the wife of Hank Pym. And those two, Hope Van Dyne and Hank Pym, is you know, they're one of the founding members of the Avengers in the comic books, so you have to introduce those characters in some way, even if they're not going to be integral to the group, because you already have this team that's established. So I don't think it's integral to the storyline. You do get introduced to this character, and that will end up showing up later. So I would actually recommend watching this, even though I didn't feel like it was a great film, just so that you can hear some of the little jokes that are made and callbacks and stuff to some of the other films that we're going to get into in Phase 3. So as far as a little recap of Phase 2, I do feel like of the three phases that we've been through, it's the weakest of the phases. I do think that Marvel tried to... I think that they knew that they needed to raise the bar, and I think they tried too hard to do that. And it felt really organic. They took some darker tones with a lot of their storytelling. Like I was saying, as far as Iron Man, you know, obviously it was really much of a, you know, he was kind of off on his own for a little bit, trying to figure out who he was. And you know, Thor: The Dark World was a little bit darker. Captain America, though, it is, I think, so lighthearted. I think there's aspects of it that can be a little bit dark. So I just feel like Phase 2 was not well done, but I think it was necessary to kind of lead us into Phase 3. So Phase 3, I think, starts off very, very strong with one of my favorite comic book storylines is the Civil War storyline. They synthesize it with Captain America, so it becomes Captain America Civil War. So I'll tell you a little bit about the storyline. So basically, the comic book starts where there are a number of villains and superheroes who are essentially, you know, they're trying to do good for the world, and they end up, you know, some smaller superheroes end up essentially causing a bigger mess than they intended to, which really causes the rest of the world to be like, yo, I think we're having an issue with these superheroes because they're unchecked. So basically, there becomes a Superhero Registration Act in which the superheroes essentially are told you need to unmask and you need to essentially become essentially a police officer and be trained in and, you know, collect a paycheck and be registered just like every other law enforcement. And that becomes a problem, and it becomes Captain America on one side and Tony Stark on the other. Now, there's a number of big name things that happen here. So just to tell you a little bit of the backstory as far as what Marvel was dealing with at the time. Marvel was dealing with, they had basically shot Captain America Civil War for the most part. And a deal with Disney happens with Fox, and they acquire some creative rights to Peter Parker's Spider-Man. It just wrapped up with The Amazing Spider-Man 2. Movies weren't doing really that great, so they decided they wanted to go a different direction. Marvel acquired some of the rights, so they were able to squeeze in Spider-Man into this film. In the comics, the reason why this storyline is so important is because a lot of superheroes were told to unmask. The kind of the heart of that storyline was actually Spider-Man and Peter Parker, because he decides that he unmasks, and that shocks the world, as Peter Parker just kind of coming out and saying, like, hey, I've been Spider-Man this entire time. My wife and kids are okay with it, and I, you know, decided to come out. He thinks he's doing the right thing. Tony Stark convinces him. He thinks he's doing the right thing. It turns out it goes not the best way, and they start, the superheroes start to fight amongst themselves, thus Civil War. And actually one of the superheroes gets killed by Thor android that they create. And then really it becomes a thing. It's like, hey, what are we fighting? What fighting each other for? This storyline, it includes all the superheroes that are out there. So they eventually try to, they're essentially trying to recruit each other. Both sides are trying to recruit the X-Men. They try to recruit the Fantastic Four. And, you know, people are really picking and choosing sides. And it's really heart-wrenching, because it really tears apart a lot of the heroes that you love. You know, Fantastic Reed Richards and Sue Richards, their marriage gets destroyed because of this. Spider-Man essentially chooses Tony Stark's side to start, and then he decides, yo, I made a huge mistake, and decides to join Cap's side. But then obviously once Goliath, he sees the guy who ends up, superhero who ends up getting killed, everyone kind of decides, like, yo, I think this isn't what we wanted. We wanted to, you know, we don't see it eye to eye, but we never wanted any of us to die. So the Marvel had to go a little bit of a different route. The Marvel Cinematic Universe had to go a different route. They didn't have the rights to Spider-Man, so he could be that heart and soul of the movie the way he probably could have been if they already had him. As well as, instead of doing a superhero they kind of still do a superhero registration act, but they call it the Sokovia Accords, in which the heroes now have to be essentially just registered. So there's not as much identity stuff that becomes a huge plot line. But this movie does such a good job with, again, it introduces a few other characters. You know, it introduces Black Panther to the storyline, and Black Panther is really important to have to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, just because he's incredibly intelligent. He acts as a leader and constantly challenges the Avengers with the way that they think about the world, because he's coming from, you know, one of those places where it's like it's a different country who has a different culture, different set of rules, and he really helps them to think about things in a little bit more of a unique light. Chadwick Boseman was a fantastic choice. I thought he was very badass. I thought he was very, very confident in himself. And I think it was a really good way to introduce his character. And this was kind of like, I don't think this movie would have been as successful if they had done it in like phase two, just because phase one was the first time we were seeing so many characters on the screen together. And I think it was, really cool to see that for the first time. And then when they did it again, it was like, okay, this is becoming more of the norm, so we can kind of absorb these many personality types and characters on the screen at one time. And I think it was only possible for this film to do as well as it did because of the fact that they had so much success there. I think there's a storyline. It's highly important. This is definitely not a movie you can skip just because it bleeds into the next Avengers movie. And I highly recommend watching this one because I think there's so many good things that happen here. So I'm going to knock out these next couple ones pretty quickly here. Doctor Strange is the next film in Phase 3. I don't want to say I wasn't happy about it, but I was still a little bit reluctant as far as Benedict Cumberbatch, being Doctor Strange. But I think he really truly captures the there's a level of arrogance that comes with Doctor Strange before he becomes the master of mystical arts. I think he does a really good job with something that I talk about often. I think as these actors get selected, they have three jobs. They can play their the character. You can play the Steve Rogers, you can play the Captain America, and then you have to play them both working at the same time. And I think Benedict Cumberbatch, much like some others, do a really good job with playing those three roles. Because that's what those characters have to do. That's what the actors have to do. They have to, again, they're essentially being multiple characters on screen and having the ability to shift between those two, and then also bring in those worlds together and see how it affects them. I think this movie is you have to kind of watch just because it introduced Doctor Strange. He's so integral to the next couple of movies that we are going to talk about, and you might have seen. But he introduces a lot of different things. He introduces more magic into the world that is the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But he also introduces, you can kind of see him going through the different dimensions as well too. And I think that's really important. Just because I think that's where Marvel's going to head towards, because we've basically lived on Earth for the first couple of phases outside of like Thor, really. And then this allowed us to get outside of Earth a little bit just so that we could see more of a unique perspective on these characters. Guardians of the Galaxy 2, not much to say about it. I don't think it's integral to the storyline. I personally recommend skipping it. I don't think it was a great film. It was great to see these characters interact again. They're more of a team in this movie. I do think what it does is it kind of shows how well these characters can work independently. And that's actually really important, because you'll see when we start to talk about the Avengers movie, you really get to see how well like this team doesn't have to be together in order to work. This film was just okay to me. They tried to introduce the Celestials into it, and I think they tried to go too big, in my opinion, because the Celestials are actually, within the comics, they're actually one of the major beats in the universe. So I just didn't think it was a great film. But if you want to watch it, you definitely can. But I would recommend just skipping it for some of these other movies. Okay, Spider-Man Homecoming. So Spider-Man got introduced into Captain America Civil War. I was super excited because Spider-Man is my favorite superhero of all time. And I do think that they did a really good job giving him kind of an origin story without going through the whole killing Uncle Ben again, and went with a younger Peter Parker, which I think is really important to do just because of the comic books. Peter Parker isn't as old as Captain America, obviously, and Tony Stark, so he really looks up to these guys, even though he eventually comes into his own as a leader within the Marvel universe. This movie, I think, was great. I think it had good time and good pacing. The jokes felt really natural. It was a good... Tom Holland did a really good job in his casting with balancing, those, again, like I said, those three things that you have to do to really play a superhero. And the story was great. It introduced Vulture, and you know, gave us some. It gave us a little bit of a snapshot, because I know that they're going the Sinister Six route with Scorpion, Mysterio, which is a film that's going to come out after Endgame. Mysterio, Scorpion, Vulture, the Rhino, and Shocker is another one. If I didn't already mention him. I'm missing one. It's the Lizard, I believe it is. But yeah, it's something that Spider-Man has to deal with, and I think they're slowly bringing those things, those characters on, which is really nice. The dynamic between Tom Holland and Michael Keaton, the chemistry that they have, I think was really good, just because there were so many epic moments. But I think what this film did really well, it happened towards like when the film was at towards the climax of their of the film, where Peter Parker essentially gets trapped under a bunch of rubble just because he gets tricked, and you really truly feel like Spider-Man or Peter Parker is still a kid again. You know, he's crying out for help, and sometimes the way that these superhero movies they're made is like these superheroes, like they don't need any help. They've kind of figured their way in the world as a superhero, and they have it all figured out. But, you know, to show a level of vulnerability with some of these characters, it's really important. It helps you connect with them, because, you know, if you were a superhero and you had super strength, but you happen to find yourself in that precarious situation, you know, you would probably yell out help as well, too. So, I think great choice for Marvel, and I think they're only going to continue to build off of it. Now, we finally get to Thor Ragnarok. I know I had mentioned this in my Age of Ultron breakdown, but as soon as I knew it was introduced that Thor Ragnarok was going to get on, I knew that storyline, that Asgard was going to get destroyed. It had to get destroyed. But the other thing that they did really well, because I think that Thor suffers from, you know, what Superman suffers from, as well as Hulk suffers from, in which he's just not a compelling character because he can't lose very often. He's just too powerful, you know. And when you have a superhero that doesn't have very many physical weaknesses or limitations, it makes it really hard for you to connect with the character a little bit more. So kind of like Iron Man. So if Tony Stark was without his suit, you know, he becomes more mortal, right? And same thing with Cap. If you know, obviously he's a super soldier, but you know, Cap can get his butt whooped just like any other person can get his butt whooped. Obviously, it takes a little bit more. So with a character like Thor, it you needed to have something else that he was having to fight against. And they brought in Hulk and his storyline with the Planet Hulk storyline. So brief little mention as far as that. Planet Hulk story arc is, so basically Hulk goes on a rampage in the comics, and it gets to the point where the superheroes are kind of at their wits' end. They don't know what to do. So I think Tony Stark and a few others devise a plan to send Hulk into space. They succeed, and they trap him on a desolate planet in which he just essentially has to fend for himself. He becomes his gladiator or whatever the case is, really gets into his own, falls in love, actually. And it turns out that the I think the spaceship that he goes in was actually rigged to blow up. So, like, the superheroes kind of wanted to kill him. Really sad storyline. It ends with Thor, or not Thor, but Hulk not dying, but being really, really pissed about the fact that he felt tricked and then manipulated, and then in the hopes that they were going to kill him. But they ended up just killing everyone else, including his wife, and I think they were going to have a child too. So back to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, they synthesize these two storylines where Hulk has to, you know, with that Hulk's, you know, older sister Hela, she comes to Asgard, wreaks havoc, kind of really starts, you know, the initiates Ragnarok, and then Hulk essentially, who is really not much of a match for her, has to kind of like rediscover who he is because she destroys his hammer. Again, and they introduce the Planet Hulk storyline with this, and I think going with those two storylines together, I think separately they would have been really poorly done, but together it allowed you to establish a level of pacing that kind of you could play with both story arcs. So really well done. I think you should watch it because this movie is the best movie that links directly into the third Avengers movie, and their last scene really kind of captures that. Okay, so it's no secret that I absolutely love this next movie, Black Panther. I thought it was so well done, and the anticipation around it like didn't even do it justice for how good this movie was. And the reason why this movie was so good is because it didn't feel like a superhero movie. It went off the beaten path, which you stripped off most of the superhero costumes, more of the explosions, and all other stuff that we loved in the previous film. And this was just, you know, this was about culture. This was about, social justice. This was about, identity. They asked the question, "Who are you? Who am I?" often in the story, because that's such an important thing, I think, with it, more especially within the Black community or just the communities of color, is really to identifying who you are and who you will become. And I think this story just did such a really good job, because it didn't feel like a Marvel superhero movie. It just felt like a regular movie that just happened to have superheroes attached to it. And this becomes an expansion origin story, just because he's already taken up the mantle of Black Panther, T'Challa, played by Chadwick Boseman. And the bright spots in this movie are the women. Like, the women, like, you have Nakia, who is this, like, really great kind of assassin type, rebel who... She's doing a lot of her good work outside of the country of Wakanda. You have Okoye, who's the king of essentially of the king's like personal bodyguard, and then you have Shuri, who is the brains of all the technology that's happening in Wakanda. Now, how this deviates a little bit from the comics, they don't really show T'Challa's intellect very much. I think they kind of are compartmentalized that to part of his personality, put a little bit more on Shuri. Not to say that Shuri's not highly intelligent, but one of the things that Black Panther actually does within the comics is he really shows his intelligence, and he's actually one of the scientists in Wakanda, and he brings a lot of his technology and knowledge to the Avengers. He actually challenges the Avengers quite a bit. So his importance within this universe is highly important. Definitely need to recommend that you watch it, just because, like the previous film, Thor Ragnarok, this film bleeds into the next film, and it becomes a mainstay as far as how important it is to the storyline. Well, one of the saddest movies in movie history is Avengers: Infinity War. Now, this movie loosely follows the Infinity Gauntlet storyline as well as the Infinity War storyline. In the Infinity Gauntlet storyline, so if you haven't seen the movie, you can obviously go on Netflix or anything. There are plenty of places for you to watch. But essentially, what happens at the end of the movie is this. Thanos does this giant snap and kills half of the universe. Now, in the Infinity Gauntlet storyline, the comics, that snap actually happens towards the beginning of the comics. So Thanos does his snap, and let me preface it with this. So in the comics, Thanos' motivation for the snap, when he does assemble all the Infinity Stones, is he wants to impress Lady Death. So she's the physical manifestation of Death. She's this woman. He's highly in love with her. He just wants to impress her. And he does this to impress her, and she continues to slight him. Now, one of the endings in the mid-credits scene when they introduce Thanos in the first Avengers movie is you see the other essentially talking to Thanos and says, the humans aren't to, you know, be kind of trifled with, to mess with them means to court Death. I knew what it meant, and I think Marvel did a really good job with their writing because they wrote it this way. Because in the storylines, he is trying to court Death. He's in love with her, and he wants to impress her. And fast forward, I think they did a good job without introducing Lady Death, because it would have taken away from the storyline in itself. But what they do in Infinity War is they make Thanos a protagonist. They make his story the reason why we're watching it. And essentially they make the Avengers, but I think even more so, I would say probably Iron Man and Thor are the actual antagonist of this story arc, because I think their motivations are the clearest as far as what they want to do with Thanos. So this movie's fantastic. I think, again, you're balancing all these characters that you've brought into these characters in these worlds that you essentially brought into the Marvel Cinematic Universe for 10 years. You know, you just recently brought in Wakanda, so that becomes a stopping ground for a huge battle. You, obviously, the Guardians of the Galaxy and Doctor Strange, because they have that dimension of space and or, you know, the art, the magic arts. And then you have, you know, Thor going on this mission because he had his hammer destroyed and he wants to forge a new weapon. He forges a new weapon called Stormbreaker in this movie. So one character that hasn't really been introduced into the Thor comics or Thor's movies is a guy named Beta Ray Bill. Beta Ray Bill is essentially one of the guys in one of the Nine Realms. And essentially he takes up the mantle of kind of a Thor-like character. And his weapon is called Stormbreaker. It's really similar to the weapon that Thor ends up getting. And but instead, they decided to not go that route. But you can actually, if you go back to the Thor Ragnarok, you can actually see there is a little battle tower that they have. You can actually see a picture of Beta Ray Bill on it. So that was their little montage, I guess you would say, to him. But yeah, he forges his new weapon. It's not, in the movie, it makes it seem as if it's stronger than the Infinity Gauntlet. It's not. Overall, this movie is fantastic. It's obviously you have to watch it. I think if you're going to want to enjoy Avengers Endgame, just because this is kind of like I won't say the first half, because everything from what I've been hearing about this movie is it doesn't feel like two parts. It feels like two separate movies. But obviously, there's going to be ramification from this movie into that movie. So you have to watch it. I think another unique thing about this film is that all the team mashups that they did that we couldn't see before. So obviously having Tony Stark working with the Guardians, part of the Guardians of the Galaxy, having, you know, Captain working with, you know, Black Panther and Wakanda and stuff. So yeah, it was a fantastic film. Highly recommend it. Definitely go and watch it just to get yourself prepared for Endgame. Wrapping it up, last couple films, Ant-Man and the Wasp comes out after Infinity War. Really not a great film. It's, again, I think it's just meant for lighthearted humor, just to kind of fill that space between, you know, the next couple of films that are supposed to come out in the next year. Not a great movie, but it does introduce one important thing that I think it forces you to have to watch this movie, in which they introduce the Quantum Realm. So the Quantum Realm is going to be something that I know, just from watching the trailers and stuff, they're going to introduce. Quantum Realm is just a place that it messes with time and space. And I think that's how the Avengers are going to, one of the tools they're going to use to combat Thanos and all the evil things that he's done. I think that's where this movie really, I guess, does any justice. So Although I didn't like the movie, I still think that you should watch it just because you'll get a little bit more of that background. Last movie, I went to go see this movie, I think opening weekend, just because I needed to digest it. So Captain Marvel, she's also been known as Ms. Marvel, but she's been more recently rebranded as Captain Marvel. Understands she's one of the most powerful superheroes in the Marvel Cinematic Universe and also in the Marvel Comics. She is essentially kind of part Kree in a sense, depending on the iteration that you read about. I didn't think this movie was not bad at all. I think it was entertaining. I think Brie Larson is such a likable actress, so I get why Marvel chose her. They're the scenes that you're supposed to like Captain Marvel, or you're supposed to like Carol Danvers, and because Brie Larson does be the likable person so well, it's so natural and organic. The things that I think she struggles with in this movie is when she really has to be that superhero, when she really has to be that take charge, I'm this powerful being. I just feel like it doesn't feel organic. It doesn't feel like it's really her. In the comics, this is where I'll say about this. In the comics, Carol Danvers she's a lot closer to Tony Stark and Thor than I think sometimes talked about. She's really arrogant. Right, and I think that could have played really, really well if they went that route. But I think that they didn't really want us to dislike Carol Danvers in this movie. But I think that might be I think it's something that we just need to get over. Like there are women who are arrogant, and they should be arrogant because they're really good at what they do. Not that I'm advocating for arrogance. I'm just saying that we should just allow some agency as far as, you know, some of like obviously we watch films with Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark was being highly arrogant. We didn't really care. We thought it was funny. Thor was being arrogant. We didn't care. We thought it was cute, funny, all that stuff. I think we should allow that same agency as far as this person. And here's what I'll say. I think this film was very similar in the respects to Captain America, the first Avenger, in which they struggled to find a good way to do their origin story. And with that, it's only going to I think it makes it that much better because it's a problem I know that Marvel's going to fix, which I think is going to help propel the character that much further, because now Carol Danvers, she's supposed to be the new face of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Like, she's going to take up that Captain America mantle. I'm not going to say if Captain America dies. I think he does, but I really hoped that this film would have established her more as a leader, as a go-get-em. And we might see that in the Endgame, but we might not. So, you know, we'll see. But overall, I thought this movie was just okay. They had two origin stories here. They had Carol Danvers, Captain Marvel, and then they also had Nick Fury. I just think that the writing for Nick Fury up until this point has been really, really great. But in this movie, I think it fell short because it didn't feel like the Nick Fury we knew. And it didn't feel like I was being put down a path where I could see where Nick Fury became the Nick Fury we know in today's day and age. All in all, I just thought the film was just okay. But I do think she's going to improve, and I think we're going to really like her moving forward, especially in Endgame and beyond. Last point is something that Marvel kind of came up with. So this Infinity Gauntlet War storyline, Marvel's referring to these as sagas. So, you know, I was talking about obviously the phases that we have, but Marvel's also obviously saying that this overarching story that we've got about Thanos and the Infinity Stones and stuff has basically been one saga. I think what they're going to start doing moving forward is they're going to start introducing several sagas at one time and then kind of culminating it into what they've done for these 22 films and, you know, ending it on a really high note. But anyways, I appreciate you guys, you know, if you're still with me, I appreciate you guys listening to this breakdown. I hope that helps for, you know, kind of casual fans who don't want to sit down and watch 22 films back to back. I'm really excited for Endgame. I don't really have any huge theories on it outside of I know that they're going to introduce the Quantum Realm a little bit more so than they did in Ant-Man and the Wasp. But I appreciate you guys, you know, listening to it. If you have any comments or feedback, you can always feel free to shoot me a DM. You know, this is your guy, Saxy Prince, a.k.a. Yinka Allende, from the Climbing the Pocket. And we always appreciate, you know, all the support and love and whatnot. So, yeah, once you get to see Endgame, you know, let's chat about it. Much love to all, and I appreciate you listening to the podcast.